morning, everybody. Even for you, when you will look at this video, it's not the morning, but for me it is, okay? I'm very happy to have this opportunity to contribute to the MOOC Energy Production, Transportation and Storage for École des Ponts. My name is Didier Cachemer. Let me first briefly introduce myself. I am an engineer from École Polytechnique and ENSTAR. Then I worked in the research activity for a few years in laser applications to material processing. Then I was appointed in the French Ministerial Department of Research and Technology during 10 years. And then in the French Atomic and Renewable Energy Commission, CEA, again for 10 years. Then in near 2010, I decided to move and to launch my own activity as an independent consultant in the fields of energy strategy and international partnerships. Today, I will speak about nuclear electricity production. This is a very large topic, of course, and I will focus on some aspects and try to share with you both basics on the technology and also some personal views, let's say, about this this topic. The content will be the following. First, we will discuss the technology, some basics, and also the issue of level of maturity of the technology. Then we will have a short view about the finance aspect with issue of CapEx and also OPEX, leading to the question of the cost of nuclear electricity. I will focus on France for this part. In the third part, we will speak about the players in this market. I would like to say rather stakeholders for the first, and then more on the industrial point of view, the top players on the worldwide market. And then finally, some personal concluding remarks. So the first point I would like to insist on is that nuclear energy to produce electricity is rather a young technology, only since 1951. And probably you know this very famous picture of the four first bubble lamps illuminated thanks to nuclear electricity. It was the experimental breeder reactor, fast neutron reactor, in Idaho, USA, 51, so quite recent compared to wind or solar. Then it went very, very fast. June 54, Obninsk, Russia, USSR at this time. The first 5 megawatt reactor was connected to the grid. Then 56 August in England, Calderhall 1, the first 50 megawatt reactor was operated for commercial purposes. So as you see, it went very fast from the first experimental demonstration up to the industrial operation. And of course, we must keep in mind that at this time, it was the Cold War. Then the blocks were racing together, both in the space application or in the nuclear application. So this is the background of this very rapid development up to the industrial level. However, the main period for the development of the worldwide industrial fleet was during the 70s up to the 90s, let's say. So this was the historical background. Now let's have a look at the technology basics. There are two ways to use the electricity, not the electricity, the energy of the atoms: fission, fusion. Very simple. Fission, you take a big atom such as uranium or plutonium and you break into parts, smaller. Fusion, you take a small atom, let's say hydrogen or any hydrogen isotope, and you merge into a bigger one. In both cases, let's say, thanks to Albert Einstein, we know that there are production of neutrons, radiation, and energy. Now the issue is how to transform this energy, this heat produced by fission. We will focus on fission in the following of this lecture, to transform into electricity. In fact, this step is quite similar to the one used in any thermal power plant using fossil fuels. So the principle is fission produces heat. The heat is conveyed through the heat conveyor fluid to produce steam. Then the steam propels the turbine. The turbine leads an alternator, and the alternator produces electricity. Let's simply add to this that two points. The first is a quotation, kind of joke, but perhaps interesting for you, looking things from a higher point of view. The quotation is from Lord Ernest Rutherford, who is not anybody in the field of physics and atomic physics. And in 1933, he said, quote, "The energy produced by breaking down the atom is a very poor kind of thing. Anyone who expects a source of power from the transformation of these atoms is talking moonshine." Well, obviously, he was wrong. So this is why I say that it's kind of a joke, because even the most famous physicists in this field can have perhaps sometimes some bad forecast for the future. And my second remark on this basics of technology is that beyond electricity production, we can also have other decarbonized uses possible with the produced heat from the nuclear fission reactors. It might be urban heat, industrial heat, production of low carbon hydrogen, if we look at more recent ideas for development of the use of the heat produced by the fission. So now we have the basics from the physics. We have to have also a look on the basics from the technology. So a fission reactor core is characterized by, let's say, four elements. The fuel. It can be uranium, it might be also plutonium or even thorium. And we have to keep in mind that in a single gram of uranium 235 isotope, we have as much energy as in a ton of oil. This gives a first order of magnitude of the interest of the nuclear energy. The second characteristic from the technological point of view is the energy level of the neutrons. All the reactors I will be speaking about in the late of this talk, except perhaps I will have a brief look to fast neutrons, but all the reactors operated industrially in the world are, let's say, slow neutron reactors. But the neutrons emitted by the physics, by fission, are fast. So we have first to slow down the neutrons in the reactor core, and this is achieved by a moderator. The goal is that at least one of the emitted neutrons can produce another fission in another atom in the core, and therefore lead to what is called the chain reaction. This moderator can be graphite, ordinary water, heavy water enriched in deuterium. Several combinations are possible, but the best moderator is hydrogen, simply because the mass of the proton nucleus of hydrogen is almost the same as the mass of the neutron. And the most common element in the nature containing a lot of hydrogen is, let's say, ordinary water. Then the third component necessary to go to the electricity production is the heat transfer fluid. It might be ordinary water, heavy water, gas, such as carbon dioxide or helium, or liquid metals, such as molten sodium, for example. Again, several combinations are possible. And many of these combinations of these four elements have been studied and have been tested in the past. The different choices are not totally independent. For example, only graphite or heavy water as moderator can be used if you decide to try to use natural uranium as fluid. But let's be pragmatic. Nowadays, near 90% of nuclear reactors in the world use light water, ordinary water, as both the heat transfer fluid and the moderator at the same time. So these technologies are called pressurized water reactors, PWR, which are the most common in the worldwide nuclear fleet. Most common means 258 units in 25 countries. And just behind, boiling water reactors, also using ordinary water as heat transfer fluid and as moderator, but with a slightly different technology. These are called BWR, boiling water reactors. And according to my figures, 91 units in 10 countries. So in the future of this talk, I will focus on PWR reactor as they are the more widespread in the world. But light water also captures the neutron. This is why we need to enrich the uranium in its isotope 235, which is only 0.7% in natural uranium, mainly composed with uranium 238 isotope. And we have to bring up this share of 235 up to near 4% instead of 0.7% in natural uranium, so that the chain reaction is maintained in the reactor. So this issue of the fuel, so how the uranium 235 fissile is embedded in some components manageable in nuclear reactor is an essential point of view. So let's have a brief look at the process which allows to go from the uranium ore, called usually yellow cake, up to the components in the core. So first of all, the uranium is imported. The major countries up to now for France and for Europe providing uranium, natural uranium, uranium ore, are Niger, Kazakhstan, Australia, Canada, and more recently also agreement signed with Mongolia. This natural uranium is then converted in UF6, hexafluoride uranium, which will be enriched in its part in uranium 235 and then transformed in oxide uranium UO2. This UO2 solid under a form of powder is compacted in some small pellets. Then these pellets are put in rods, it's called crayon in French, and more than 200 of these rods will be put together to create what's called the assembly. Then this assembly, near 200 for a reactor core, will be really where the fission reaction will occur in the reactor core. This represents something like 80 tons of uranium for a typical 900 megawatt reactor. France imports something like 8,000 to 9,000 tons of uranium per year at a cost between less than 1 billion euro per year. This has to be compared with 60 billion euro per year import of fossil fuels. Let's have a brief look, and this is not in the slide, but just a comment on fast neutron reactor at this step. Obviously, some of the countries I previously mentioned as exporting the uranium natural, the ore, might be subject to some geopolitical instabilities, let's say. It's not difficult to see now which of these countries can be subjected to some instabilities in terms of import-export. Moreover, a scarcity of the uranium, natural uranium, can be perhaps expected for the next century if we rely on the reasonable price of uranium today, which is something like 130 euro per kilogram. And the reason for this is that slow neutron reactors, such as PWR, only use 1% of the energy of the natural uranium. The used fuel, as illustrated here, still contains a huge part, more than 90%, of uranium-238. A small part of still uranium-235, which has been used to produce during 3 to 5 years, staying in the core of the electricity. Then in the used fuel, you have also a part of plutonium, some fission products, which will go to waste. I will discuss this a little bit later. And less than 1 kilogram out of 500 kilogram at the beginning of minor actinides, americium, neptunium, curium. But this large part of uranium-238 remaining in the used fuel has a particularity of being, let's say, fertile. Fertile means that if one neutron is absorbed, it can be transformed to plutonium-239, which is, as uranium-235, fissile. So if you manage to have in the core a flux of neutrons that gives a little bit more than 2 neutrons per fission, knowing that always a small part of the neutrons are lost because of leaks out of the core or by what's called sterile captures, then you will have one of the neutrons that will maintain the chain reaction being captured by another fissile atom, and you still have one available neutron that could be captured by an atom of uranium-238 to be transformed in plutonium-239, leading then to production, in fact, of new fuel available for possibly used in fast neutron reactors. The technology of fast neutron reactors has been experienced in France from 67 up to 2009 in France, in reactors called Rhapsodies and Phoenix and Super Phoenix. Nowadays, the policy in France has not decided to go this way, but I wanted only to illustrate the fact that with a mix of fast neutron and slow neutron reactors in the national fleet, we could have for thousands of years the availability of fuel, because we have in France now a large stock of uranium-238 that could be used. Large stock mean more than 350,000 tons of uranium-238 in 2024. Well, let's go back again to slow neutron reactors, PWR. So from heat in the core to electricity on the grid, basically the reactors are composed of 3 independent circuits. The primary circuit is a closed circuit to extract the heat from the core. The fuel assemblies of the core are in a steel tank called the vessel, filled with water, which heats at the contact with the assemblies up to 300 degrees Celsius. The water in this closed primary circuit is kept under pressure around 150 bars so that it prevented from boiling. Then the heat is conveyed to the secondary circuit, which is also a closed circuit. The water in the primary circuit is radioactive, and it is the only one to be radioactive. Then the water of the primary circuit transmits its heat to the water of the non-radioactive secondary circuit, and it's transformed into steam in steam generators. Usually we have 3 up to 4, according to the power of the nuclear plants, steam generators in one reactor. And the steam will then turn the turbine. The third circuit is the cooling system. This one is an open circuit, and it is used to condense the steam out of the turbine so that the water of the secondary circuit can go back in the closed circuit. To condense the steam, it is put in contact with thousands of tubes in which circulates some cold water. This one taken from an external source, a river or the sea. The water from the condenser is discharged at its source, and to limit the exhaust of the water, the heat of the water at the exhaust, you can use some cooling towers, these large towers with more than 150 meters at the base. You often see near the nuclear plants. They might be added to limit the heating of the exhaust water. And in this case, a small portion of the water evaporates into the atmosphere. And this is the origin of what's sometimes called the cloud factory, when you see these white plumes above the cooling tower, which are not fumes, but are only water evaporating. If we go now into just on the same slide, a little bit more architectural design details on the design of the nuclear plant. Basically, two islands, separate islands. This is the usual vocabulary in the nuclear technology. The nuclear island, which is composed by the reactor building itself. The reactor building is a concrete cylinder topped with a concrete dome. Its function is to contain all the radioactive substances and also to protect against external aggressions. It houses the vessel, hosting the core itself, the entire primary circuit and part of the secondary circuit, including the steam generators. Also, some safety and security devices. In the nuclear island, the second main part is the fuel building, where you have the storage pools for the fuel and the handling facilities, both for the new fuels and for the spent fuels. The building of auxiliary comes in addition with electrical rooms, the control command room, etc. All this organization is called usually the BOP, balance of plant. I didn't mention it, but the power of the reactor can be varied by pushing control rods that absorb neutrons more or less deeply in the middle of the fuel assemblies. This is a way of regulating the power of the reactor. And in the event of abnormal situation, safety bars automatically fall into the core and instantly shut down the reactor. Then the heat is transformed into electricity in what's called the second island, the conventional island, hosting the turbine, the alternator, and connected to the external electricity grid. On the same location, on the same plant, you can operate several reactors. And it's usually the case for, let's say, scale economics parameters. Just to give an example, in Gravelines, in the north of France, 600 to 900 megawatt reactors are operated on the same plant, let's say. It's called a centrale in France, to be distinguished from a reactor. One of the topics that I should not go without mentioning is the nuclear waste. And I will not go into details about that. It's not the main topic today, but only provide some orders of magnitude. A 900 power megawatt reactor produces 0.8 ton per year, which represents 3 cubic meters, of high activity waste, mainly fission products, after reprocessing and vitrification. On the total, during the 40 years of operation, the whole existing fleet has then produced something like 5,000 cubic meters of these high activity vitrified waste, which is not very big. Just to provide for comparison orders of magnitude of, with the industrial waste, generally speaking, every inhabitant in France produces, if I may say so, 2,500 kilogram industrial waste every year, among which more than roughly 100 kilogram are industrial toxic waste. In comparison, the same French inhabitant produces, let's say, quote, each year less than 1 kilogram nuclear waste, among which less than 0.01 kilogram, 10 grams, are high activity waste. But I don't want to minimize the risk and the perception in the opinion of the risk involved by nuclear waste, and it remains a sensitive topic, of course, despite these orders of magnitude and despite all the technological method solutions and legal frameworks that has been developed since 20 years now in France, the long-term radiotoxicity of the nuclear waste remain a concern for the public opinion, and it has to be faced with lucidity, let's say. Now I come to the issue of level of maturity of this technology. First, I would like to insist on the fact that it is the second source of low-carbon electricity in the world. These figures are from 2022, but I think it should remain the same. And it's the first source of low-carbon electricity in the EU. To provide some more precise data, at the end of 2021, the worldwide nuclear capacity was 390 electric gigawatts, provided by 437 reactors in 32 countries. Well, this gives the maturity of the industrially operated nuclear technology in the world. This capacity remains quite stable during the recent years. One interesting figure is the total number of experience acquired by the whole community of nuclear operators in the world since the beginning of the industrial use of this technology. From the beginning, 637 reactors in 35 countries have been industrially operated. Now, 199 of these are permanently shut down. But on the total, this leads to more than 19,000 reactor years of experience accumulated by industrial involved in operation of this reactor. And this is very important from the point of view of safety, return of experience, sharing of best practices among the different operators of this technology. However, the average age of the fleet now operated is 35 to 40 years. In 2021, 10 reactors in the world have been definitely shut down, among which 3 in Germany. On the different point of view, 56 reactors were under construction in 19 countries in 2021. And in France, after Fessenheim was definitely shut down, 56 reactors produces more than 70% of our electricity. This is what is illustrated on the chart here, France appearing to be, among other countries, the one in which the share of electricity produced thanks to nuclear is the highest. However, for now and for the future, I think that the trend is definitely in Asia. 70 reactors have been connected to the grid since 2005 in Asia, with a total capacity of more than 63 electric gigawatts. And the construction of 6 reactors began in China only during the year 2021. So definitely the trend for the years, say, let's say 70 to 90s, I mentioned it was the main peak of the development of the technology, was rather in OECD countries, developed countries, Russia at this time, and now and for the future, sorry, it will for sure be in Asia that the trend of the development will be the most dynamic. Now I come to my second part, which is dedicated to some views about the finance aspect, and let's begin my CapEx, because probably it's one of the, let's say, more differentiation point, the most important differentiation point between nuclear and other energy production technology, including renewable. Because the capital invested is heavy and has to come early in the process. So, of course, this is the origin of risks for the investors, which has to be mitigated, shared. But definitely the capital invested is heavy and has to come early in the process. The long time return on invest, loan repayments, revenues will only come when the plant will be in operation years later. Risks are related to the complexity of the technology, but also to the stability or instability of the electricity market, because the return on invest will be based on the selling the electricity. The cost of capital is also a critical point for the mitigation of the risks by investors. These are the reasons why the government definitely play a central role in investing and in financing also the building of new nuclear power plants. The government has to provide clear and sustainable political support in a long-term national energy strategy. Some of the countries nowadays that speak about building some nuclear plants definitely do not appear as stable for the long term. So my personal point of view, if I may share, is that they are not ready to build some nuclear power plants. Then the government is also in charge of establishing an effective regulatory system, legal, regulatory, safety, security, which will increase the confidence for potential investors. And it has also a central role in the public acceptance issue, which might be dealt at the political level also. Consequently, I would say that financing a new nuclear power plant through standard capital raising, such as in other industrial projects with equity and debt, is not really probable. However, some innovative methods could be used to mitigate the risks, such as public-private partnerships, long-term agreements with large consumers of electricity, as it was the case in Finland for the EPR in Olkiluoto with some paper manufacturers, which are large consumers of electricity, etc. But we have to look to innovative methods, of course, but my main point is that the role of the government is central. The riskiest phase, according to me, for the investors is construction, particularly for folk and new programs. Folk means first of a kind. The relatively low number of reactors worldwide I mentioned and constructed during a quite large period of time obviously leads to the fact that we cannot speak nowadays of real large series effect. So the every nuclear power plant remains specific, at least for the place where it is built. Never exactly the same from one reactor to another reactor. simply because of the place where it is located, will be different even if the technology is almost the same, if it is near a river or near the sea, etc., in a hot country or in a cold country, etc. A recent study on the 451 reactors in the world showed that the duration, the average duration of the construction was 7.5 years. But if we look honestly to the Flamanville EPR reactor, when it was decided in 2007, it was supposed to be completed in 2012, which was quite ambitious, at a cost of 3.3 billion. And it appears that 12 years of delay have occurred, and the final cost is over 19 billion euros. My source is in the public press Le Monde, May 2024, according to figures from the French account court. In Olkiluoto in Finland, the construction of the EPR took 14 years between 2005 and 2019. On the contrary, in China, the EPR in Taishan were built quite faster. So we are far from the 7.5 years average duration of the construction. And this is not very positive for investors when they see that the construction is delayed for more than 10 years. So based on this EPR experience, EDF in France has developed since 2015 the new reactor called EPR2, mainly in order to reduce the cost of construction and to tackle with some of the problem which has appeared in the construction of the first of a kind ones. The building of three pairs of EPR2 in France has been announced by the President Macron in his statement in Belfort on the 10th of February 2022, and the associated figures are the following. The cost of the program will be estimated to 51.7 billion euros, which means for three pairs of reactors, to something like 8.6 billion euros per reactor. And coupling to the grid for the first EPR2 is planned for 2035-37, provided that the first concrete is poured in 2028, which means 7 years for the building, which is quite, again, ambitious. But it took the experience, the feedback of the experience of the EPR. Now, if I come to operation cost, OPEX. In fact, the key figure for OPEX is the cost of the produced electricity. And the components of the operational cost are, for some of them, quite standard, such as staff, external consumption and services. Okay, this also appears in other ways of producing electricity. But some of the components of the operational cost are specific of nuclear. Let's look at the fuel. It's very interesting to see that the fuel is less than 10% of the operational cost, including natural uranium and the enrichment process I described previously. But you also have provision for deconstruction and end of fuel cycle, which is made compulsory by the law in France for the nuclear operators. They have to provide money for that. And also some safety-related work for life extension when they are imposed by the nuclear authority after some inspection and under their decisions. For the extension of life up to above 40 years of the French fleet, for example, it represents more than 50 million euros per year for EDF until 2028. So these are some components of the operational cost that are, let's say, specific of the nuclear fleet. According to the French CRE, the Energy Regulation Commission, in 2003, the cost of the electricity produced by the French nuclear fleet was 60.7 euro per megawatt hour for the period 2026-2030. This includes Flamanville EPR, but does not take into account the need of construction of the new EPR2 reactors. And for the EPR2 reactors, the estimation, provided that, of course, the duration and the technical constraints of the construction are respected, is something between 40 and 100. It's quite a large uncertainty margin related to the cost of capital. If the cost of capital remains 1%, then 40 euro per megawatt hour. Some personal comments on these figures. First, factually, the cost of electricity from Fessenheim, fully amortized before the political decision was taken and implemented to permanent shutdown of this, was a little bit less than 30 euro per megawatt hour in 2018. Then, as a personal consumer, individual consumer and citizen, I pay my electricity still in France, and despite of the recent energy crisis, Ukraine, etc., still quite cheaper than a German household, and it's also true for the industry. Our share of nuclear electricity is a competitive advantage and also a benefit for the citizens in the price of the electricity bills. I know it increases, but this is for other reasons, I think, more geopolitics. And my third personal comment is simply, the best it works, the less it costs. This is obvious, but after the COVID period in 2022, only 25 of our 56 units in France of the French fleet were in operation. So definitely the maintenance and the programmation of the maintenance is key to master the costs of operation. Now I go to my third part, which is dedicated to players. I'd like to first rather look at stakeholders. I already insisted on government, but I would like to do it again here. They are responsible of international treaties, of cooperation agreement between countries, of the national long-term energy policy, of legal and regulatory frameworks, and more generally speaking, they are responsible of the country's stability to secure investors, to secure the operators of the plant. They are also responsible for organizing the public research and development sector. Let's mention the French Atomic Energy and Renewable Energy Commission in France. They are responsible of education and training, universities, etc., to ensure that the necessary skills in the country will be available in due time for the operation of the plants. And these are key points, really, for me. Second kind of stakeholders, and they should be looked at as independent from the first, is regulatory bodies. They should be not only independent but also correctly empowered for the safety, the security, the providing the license for construction and for operation to industrial operators. They are in charge of inspection, regular inspection on the sites, to be sure that all the legal and regulatory framework are put into practice correctly by the industrial operators. And just to underline the importance of this second kind of stakeholders, you have to see the recent debate in France about the merging of the Nuclear Safety Authority and the Nuclear Institute expert IRSN. Then the third kind of stakeholders, of course, is industrial. On the first top of the list of the industrial companies, I would put the owner-operator of the reactor. They are the key players because, by the law, they are fully responsible of the safety of the operation of the plant. But you also have all the industrial companies involved in the supply chain for the components, in the civil works, the subcontractors for maintenance, which has also to be qualified, certified, with very specific competences. And in some countries, not all, also the industry, the companies involved in the conception and design of the reactors, the manufacturing of the large components, manufacturing and management of the fuel, both in front end for the new fuel and in back end for the spent fuel. And then, last but not the least, I would like to introduce as one of the major stakeholders, the public opinion. If I have a short, let's say, focus, zoom on this stakeholder, we can see some positive trends, but it remains a very sensitive issue, of course, with the development of media, non-government organizations, and social networks. A worldwide Ipsos study in 2022 showed an increase of 7 points in people in favor of nuclear energy, increase of 11 points even in EU, and of 15 points in Germany, which is significant when you compare to the recent German policy. In France, in 2023, there was also a poll, which is the one illustrated here. Are you in favor of building or in favor of closing nuclear plants in France? So 50% respondents were in favor of building some new nuclear plants. And what is significant is that this figure is rapidly increasing. Of course, this has to be analyzed through the recent crisis of energy in Europe, partly due to the war in Ukraine, but not only, probably. The argument in favor of nuclear for this 50% of respondents were energy independence, low cost of electricity, and low greenhouse gas CO2 emission. However, there is still a lot remaining to be explained. And I will quote here another poll in France, 2017, so a little bit earlier, but very illustrative according to me. 44% of the respondents, and it was an increasing share, believe that nuclear power plants contribute a lot, and 34% consider that nuclear energy contribute a little to the greenhouse effect, warming of the atmosphere, which is scientifically, technically false, but this is the perception public opinion has. So there is still a lot to do to explain. And if I dare, I would like to quote Greta Thunberg on German primetime television on October the 12th, 2022. Quote, if we already have them, nuclear plants, in operation, I think it's a mistake to close them to focus on coal. I think she's right. Our main challenge should be get out of fossil and primary of coal. If I come now to more, industrial and import-export players on the worldwide market, we must recognize that number one remains the Russian Federation. In 2024, Rosatom, the main player of the nuclear industry and diplomacy of the Russian Federation, despite the sanction after Ukraine's war, is building 19 reactors worldwide and has signed recently numerous cooperation agreements, including in sub-Saharan Africa. Obviously, nuclear technology export is not only a commercial issue, it's also an influence tool. Diplomatic and political influence tool. China, I've already mentioned that for the future, near future, probably it's here that things will be the more dynamic. China has built half of the world's reactor between 2003 and 2022. It means 49 out of 99. And as a consequence, is now strongly aiming to export its own products and know-how. South Korea has to be mentioned because they signed a significant contract in 2009 with the United Arab Emirates for the construction of 4 PWR reactors in Baraka, which will represent 25% of the country's electricity. So the first one started in 2020. It was planned in 2017. But it was the COVID period, and well, the construction went quite smoothly, in fact. It was the first success for exports for Korean industry. And also from the, let's say, geopolitical point of view, it was significant because it was the first nuclear power plant operated in Arabic countries. Then do not forget the US, the largest fleet, nuclear fleet worldwide. In February 2024, 93 reactors in operation in 54 power plants. Even if it is providing, let's say, only 18.2% of the country's electricity in 2022, it is the largest fleet worldwide. And we must also keep in mind that Westinghouse, initially a US company, he is the original designer of most of the PWR reactors worldwide. Adaptation has been achieved through licenses in France, in Korea, etc. And just to illustrate from the historical point of view, in France, the name of the company Framatome, now part of EDF, when it was created in 1958, means Franco-American de Construction Atomique, French America Atomic Construction. It is interesting to look at the area in terms of companies and jobs covered by the nuclear industry. So I will quote these figures from a recent study produced by GIFEN, the French group of all the industrial companies involved in the nuclear. The study was published in 2023 and it's called MATCH. More than 3,000 companies involved in the nuclear industry in France, more than 85% of them being SMEs, so wide spread network of small and medium-sized companies, not only the big one, and more than 50% of them exporting their know-how and their technology or their components, their products, their services. It represents 220,000 jobs, of which 125,000 direct jobs in France. We can have we can consider in this large network of company, of course, on the top again, EDF as the owner operator of the French fleet, manufacturers. Framatome, formerly Areva NP nuclear plant, is now owned by EDF. For the fuel, Orano, previously also part of Areva, is involved in the both front end and back end of the fuel. And we also have in France a dedicated agency for the waste management called ANDRA, A-N-D-R-A. For the conventional part, major player for the turbine and the well-known model Arabelle was Alstom. Then in 2015 it became GE. Then again in 2024 nowadays it comes under EDF. Major players in the civil works, Bouygues, Vinci, Eiffage, etc. And I would like not to forget major players in the engineering support. Companies such as Assystem, for example, are very active in the support to the nuclear players, to the nuclear industry. If we extend this look in terms of jobs perimeter to the EU27 perimeter plus UK, and here my source is a recent study I was involved partly in called NN2+, published for the first time end 2023, but the project NN2+ is still going on. It is dedicated to training and education for the nuclear industry in Europe. The corresponding figures in terms of jobs is something like 500,000 jobs in this geographic perimeter, among which 380,000 are in industry. The other being regulatory bodies, safety authorities, medical applications, etc., research and development, waste management. But only in industry, 380,000 jobs in the EU 25 plus UK perimeters. And in the next 20 years, the same study exhibit a need for new recruitment of 130,000 to compensate retirement or move to other sectors, and in addition, 85,000 new recruitment for growth of the nuclear fleet, even in a very conservative hypothesis of 10% of growth of the European fleet. So definitely there is a need of skills. I will come back to this in my conclusion, and there is an opportunity for jobs. What I've described up to now are, let's say, standard. I often took the example of the 900 megawatt reactor to provide orders of magnitude. EPR is more than 1,600, so very high in terms of power compared to the average 1 gigawatt, let's say. But we might look in near future to new players in the game, and perhaps game changer. This is the small modular reactors. Perhaps, and this was the argument for building larger reactor, perhaps the price of the electricity will be higher. The argument to build EPR with higher power than the standard 900 megawatt or 1 gigawatt usual, let's say, reactors was if we build a bigger reactor, we will be able to reduce the cost of the electricity produced. Okay. But according to what I have illustrated previously, we also see that it is very difficult to build. So the trend to small and modular reactor might be dominated by the fact that it's easier to build, perhaps, with a reduced initial investment, the safety being easier to demonstrate, the maintenance being made easier also, and the building may being made easier because a significant part of the components might be manufactured, assembled in factory and not on the site. Working on the site costs a lot. Working in the manufacturer might be a significant way to reduce the cost of the final nuclear power plant. When I say small and modular, typically this means less than 300 megawatt. 70 innovative small reactors of this type with various combination, various architecture are now under study, and more than 10 startups have been recently created in France to try to explore and to develop this type of small and modular reactors. Among positive signals I'd like to underline, the European Commission has launched SMR Industrial Alliance recently, which aims to accelerate the deployment of small and advanced modular reactors and ensure a strong EU supply chain, including a skilled workforce. End of quote. The quote is from March 2024, so it's quite the actuality. Now I come to my concluding remarks, if I may. The major challenge for energy, including renewable energy, including management of the grids, including storage technology, including smart grids, etc., according to me, it can be summarized by how to maintain controllable electricity production capacity by 35 at affordable prices for consumers and simultaneously succeed in the collective achievement of climate neutrality in Europe by 2050. Symmetric commitment, symmetric challenge. This will demand for sure to develop renewable. However, we must admit that the value chain to develop renewable are not under full control in Europe. China has taken a general lead in large-scale solar, but also in offshore wind power, in hydrogen, in batteries, in electrical mobility, etc. So the nuclear energy should therefore continue to be a major component of carbon-free electricity generation in Europe, complementing renewable energy. The IEA, the International Energy Agency, summarized it in 2022. Nuclear energy can help make the energy sector's journey away from unabated fossil fuel faster and more secure. Of course, quite a perfect summary of my views and of I think the what should be the reasonable approach for the balance between renewable energy, new technology of management of the grids, and contribution of nuclear energy. The priority being to get out of fossil fuels. And to conclude, I would like to give what I personally see as a positive signal of 2023 announcement of 15 countries in the European Union to create a nuclear alliance. This alliance has stated its estimation that nuclear energy could provide the European Union with up to 150 gigawatts of electricity capacity by 2050, compared to 100 gigawatts today, which would represent 30 to 45 new large reactors and or small modular reactors. My last comment would be to insist on what I consider as the critical key success factor for this vision of the future of nuclear energy. The first is, again, government policy. We will see what it gives, both in France and in Europe. And the second is even perhaps much more relevant for you listening to my video, is the key success factor of human resources, skills, capability. The sector needs skills in concrete, in metallurgy, in welding, in project management, in engineering, etc. Not only engineers, not only experts, but also technical jobs, support jobs. And we have seen that the network of the industry involved is very large, so the needs are very large. Just to quote again the MATCH study from the GIFEN in France in 2023, this report predicts 25% increase in workload over the next 10 years. Which represents approximately 60,000 new full-time equivalent hires, half being to compensate retirements or movement to other sectors, and half for growth and for new builds. So definitely there are opportunities in all kinds of skills, all kinds of jobs, and in a large number of companies. And in Europe, you can move. Thanks very much.